So you think they're the best team?
How could they not be the best team? If we're going off our criteria, they should be the best team.
I'll tell you, and I think David will agree with me. I just think that's a bridge too far right now, only a week in, and here's why. What is up, everybody? Thanks for joining us today on Crane & Company. This is one of two episodes that we're dropping today. Got a great one for you. Make sure if you're not subscribed, you go ahead and handle that. As usual, I'm joined by David Cohn, former Michigan quarterback to my left, Blaine Crane, former Western State Colorado wide receiver to my right. And today, we are unveiling the first Crane & Company power ranking.
Power.
This isn't a rating. This isn't if you meet on the field, who's going to be favored by this book. This is who we think is the better team with the knowledge we have based on week one. And the criteria, guys, we are using is basically just what I said. We're going to take your opponent into consideration.
Yep.
If you played a really good team or if you played a team you ought to walk through, what do we know? What do we feel like we know? And these are going to be fluid, but that's how it should be. That's how the committee should view it. That's how the other polls that come out should view it. It is what we know, even though it's only 1 week heading in to week two. So again, this is going to change, and we want to know in the comments, who is your number one team in the country? But just real quickly before we get into the top 15, we have four honorable mentions here. So they did not make the top 15, but they're right on the outside. We have Auburn, we have TCU, we have Florida, and we have Illinois. Now, obviously, Auburn and TCU, and say what you want, North Carolina did not look great from a personnel standpoint. It's still North Carolina on the road in a big-time environment. Josh Hoover looked great. TCU, after those first couple drives, looked really good. Auburn goes to a Baylor team that some have picked to win the Big 12. I still think Baylor's a pretty good
great
football
win.
Team. Looked
great
very
win.
Competent, looked very physical, especially on the line of scrimmage. Florida beat the hell out of Long Island, but DJ Lagway looked pretty healthy.
That was a big thing.
And then Illinois, while they didn't play the best opponent in the world, and you could put A&M in here. You could put a bunch of teams in here. Arizona State as well, some other ones. But we just like kind of the way Illinois looked. So out of those first four, David, I want to start with you. Which team do you think looked the best between Auburn, TCU, Florida, and Illinois?
Well, look, I'll tell you, that win on the road for Auburn to go into Baylor, who I have winning the Big 12, that was a very impressive victory. And the way that they did it, I think you've upgraded at the quarterback position with Jackson Arnold. Look, TCU, North Carolina last night on the first drive looked like they might be playing in the national championship, kind of fell apart after that. Josh Hoover throws one of the prettiest balls in the country, I'll say that. And look, I still have Illinois in my college football playoff. I think they can find a way to go 10-2 with the schedule they have. It was good to see DJ Lagway at Florida come out and be healthy, though. He was really spinning the football.
Blaine, what about you?
It's tough.
There's so many teams you could put in this. Like, it was hard to only do four.
You know, I want to sit here and say Auburn because you went into a Baylor team. You brought back Sawyer Robertson. If you're Baylor, he's a great quarterback. The weapons that they have. I thought Dave Aranda just let Baylor down in that game. But what TCU did to North Carolina last night, not only it's the atmosphere that TCU walked in, just like the year before when they played Colorado, right? Deion Sanders coming into college football. Everything's a huge deal. Bill Belichick, damn, who's at the game? Michael Jordan.
Randy Moss.
Moses,
everybody was there.
Everybody was there. And TCU not only beat them, but beat their ass.
Well, and TCU gives up a touchdown on the first drive, gets stoned on the first drive on offense. They didn't bat an eye, just handled business, just maturity.
Yeah.
That's a word
you're
going to
start. How many times did you see TCU pull both guards to run power
get
first play of the second half?
Well, Kendall Briles.
When you think
said,
like Bill Belichick and his staff will at least come in and make adjustments, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. They come out, they pull both guards, run power. What was this, 80-yard touchdown run?
Yeah, Kendall Briles said they have to run the ball better, and they do. I mean, I know Kendall wants to throw it around. The screen game is pretty intricate. This, that, and the other. But all right, let's get into this top 15. Starting at number, and again, this is just one. It's not individual. We had some disagreements on this, which we'll get into. We want to know in the comments what you think. Michigan at 15, okay, to start this bad boy off. Bryce Underwood looked like he was running the whole offense there. Looked like he was under control. I know it's against New Mexico, and this is New Mexico without Devin Dampier, who we're going to get to Utah here in a minute, who looked fantastic. But this Michigan team, we're going to know a lot more after this weekend. We've got a full Oklahoma, Michigan preview and prediction that's on the channel you need to check out. But they looked like the physical football team we thought they were. There were some times New Mexico hit him on a trick play. They had some backups in. They rotated a lot of guys on defense. New Mexico pushed the ball a little bit. But I think Michigan at 15 is fair.
I think this is about right. This is about where we rank them preseason. Obviously, you said you start with New Mexico, so not a terrific opponent. But New Mexico was efficient on offense. That's one of the things that kind of worries me about Michigan going into this game with Oklahoma was the discipline on the defensive side of the ball. And Jayshon Barnum's going to be out for the first half of that game. But the way that Bryce Underwood came in and performed, not just a game manager to hand the football to Justice Haynes and let him take off. He did that too, but Bryce Underwood through the air was breaking records as a freshman. 21 of 31, 251 yards passing, threw a touchdown, no interceptions. I think they're going to win a lot of football games with him at quarterback. Obviously, this week will be one of their toughest tests. I think 15 to 18 right there is the proper range.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have had Michigan in the top 15. I don't know if we know enough yet about Bryce Underwood and this Michigan team. I thought New Mexico, who they played, actually played pretty dang good for what we're used to seeing from New Mexico. I would have probably put an Iowa State here coming in 2-0. You go get that huge win in Ireland.
With the way they played that first half against Kansas State, I know it was raining, but that was terrible.
Well, does it? And again, I totally get your point. I do wonder if Kansas State having to beat North Dakota in the last minute kind of waters down that win a little bit. We'll see what Kansas State can do. I know it's coming back from Ireland, this, that, and the other. But I think there is five teams you could put at this 15 spot. But to me, this next team that we have at 14, let's go ahead and put them up. It's Oklahoma. Either one of these teams is either going to move way up on this list or be out of the top 15, depending on what happens this weekend in Norman. I know they played Illinois State, but they were super-duper vanilla. I thought Michigan was pretty vanilla, too, the way they called the game, which I get with Bryce Underwood. Oklahoma did not want to show anything to Michigan. I understand that. Mateer still goes 30 of 37 for 392, three touchdowns and interceptions, seven rushes for 24 yards, and a touchdown. I am so interested to see the physicality level of this Oklahoma team on the offensive line going against Michigan's front seven, because that offensive line is what struggled last year. And then these other receivers on the outside. I mean, you got Keontez Lewis goes for 119. Kanat goes 5 for 90. Deion Burks, who he knows is a stud, has 7 catches for 88 yards. They got some dudes that can do it. And I think we're going to see Jade Knott back. A little birdie told me, an anonymous source, that Jade Knott, there was a couple practice situations where his team didn't think he was ready, that he didn't practice. So if you look, it did look a little bit more like a punishment. This is alleged, but a punishment than a, oh no, he's hurt. I think you're going to see probably a decent amount of Jade Knott against Michigan in some form or the other. But Oklahoma, Blaine, I want to start with you. Week one, seeing them at 14, does that feel about right?
Yeah, that feels about right. I will say this, if you did watch that Oklahoma game versus Illinois State, first half offensively, they didn't look great.
No.
You know, I mean, you're walking into the fourth quarter up 21-3 against Illinois State. And I expected a lot more. I'm interested to see what Oklahoma looks like in the running game against Michigan, because I don't think they ran the ball fantastically.
Yeah, your leading rusher had 44 yards.
So, I mean, and trust me, it's going to be tough to beat a Michigan team if you can't run the football. I understand you have John Mateer at quarterback. So I'm fine with this Oklahoma team being at 14. But to be honest with you, even winning 35-3 against Illinois State, I wasn't that impressed.
Mm. Well, I do want to, and I've talked with some Oklahoma buddies that have brought up this point too. You got to understand, Arbuckle, this is not a let's get in 12 personnel and run counter and power offense. Like, this is going to look totally different than the offense that we've seen really at Oklahoma. They still do the RPO stuff, that there's some similarities there, but they threw the ball 37 times, right? Right? You threw it 37 times, you ran it 32 times. I think that's about what we're going to get from the play calling style of Arbuckle. And when you have RPOs built in, well, technically you are calling a run play, but sometimes you can hold it and spit it out if you see the numbers.
When they did run, I mean, they averaged three yards a carry.
No, I'm not defending the running performance against Illinois State. You should run through them like shit through a tin horn. Yeah. But my point is, I think this is a little bit of a different flavor of ice cream, and you do want to feature your best player, and that's John Mateer, I think, offensively. But again, this is going to work itself out. This is what's beautiful about it. And Styles, this just happened naturally.
Exactly. Styles make fights, and what these two teams want to do on offense and defensively is what's going to make this interesting. But also the fact that we have them ranked right there next to each other, 14 and 15, underperformed both programs a year ago. We both had both programs on the rise for this year. That's what makes this matchup in Norman so exciting beyond just what it would be traditionally. Oklahoma and Michigan could play anytime, and it would be interesting because they're blue blood college football programs. The fact that there's a parallel there, and you add on top of that, Oklahoma is Sharon Moore's alma mater. I can't wait for this football game.
Yeah. All right. Every day at Sierra, you'll find top brand apparel, footwear, and gear for 20 to 60% less than department and specialty store prices. And during clearance time at Sierra, those incredible prices are 40 divided by 2.5, carry the one, even lower. And when you shop clearance at Sierra, you can save a whole lot more on everything you need to get active and outside. That's a lot of saving. Epic brands, fast selection, teeny tiny prices. That's Sierra. Visit your local Sierra store today or shop online at sierra.com.
13, a team that, look, I thought Joey Aguilar looked pretty damn good. Yeah. You can say what you want about Syracuse. Tennessee at 13, he impressed me with his patience. It didn't look like he forced a lot. Tennessee, you know, some young wide receivers made some big plays. Defensively, if you're a Tennessee fan, I think you'll agree with me. You're a little worried about the defensive line and the depth coming into this game. And then watching that game against Syracuse, it was like the Battle of Gettysburg. Like, every time I turned around, there's another dude on the ground. And most of the time for Tennessee, it was defensive linemen. I mean, even when we're live streaming from the Cigar Bar, which obviously we live in the state of Tennessee, talking to some Tennessee fans, they're kind of worried about when you get into, because again, I got to look at who Tennessee plays this weekend. They may be off for, they probably got a cupcake. But Georgia's around the corner. Like, they're coming. And that's where that defensive line is going to rear its head. But I really love the way, David, I'll start with you. I thought Joey Aguilar looked fantastic.
Quickly, they play East Tennessee State.
East Tennessee State.
Yeah. They'll win that football game. A little erratic on a couple throws early, but man, did he settle in, including a 73-yard touchdown bomb that I thought was one of the top five plays.
That was a feather, my friend. That was a feather. Blaine, when you look at this, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say this. It was so refreshing to see, one, Josh Heupel's system is one of the best systems in college football, offensively, in my opinion. It was just refreshing to see a quarterback at Tennessee actually go through his reads.
Yeah.
Because I don't think you got that with Nico.
You think Nico predetermined?
I think Nico predetermined a lot. And the one thing about Joey Aguilar that you could go ahead and check off, his deep ball is 12 times better than whatever Nico had in
the tank.
And it's not even close.
100%.
The one thing I am worried about when it comes to this Tennessee team is, if you watch that Syracuse game, Syracuse had success running the football.
Yeah.
I mean, you take away Angeli's minus 35 yards in sacks, right? They still rushed for 103 yards and averaged 3.5 a carry. I understand it's going to be tough for a defense that when you run a system like that on offense, it's tempo sometimes and you're going to be on the field a lot. I'm just worried about Tennessee's depth on the defensive line, be able to hang in against these big SEC teams that want to get downhill. But I thought Joey Aguilar is an improvement. McCoy didn't play in this game, correct?
Yeah, unless McCoy I'm mistaken. Didn't play.
I mean, he's going to be one of the best.
They're hoping he comes back this month.
In the country. I'm fine with Tennessee being at 13, but Tennessee is so much better off with Joey Aguilar quarterback and not Nico.
Well, and, you know, we heard some rumblings, David, that the system may be a little bit different from Josh Heupel. Buddy, I watched it. That was the Josh Heupel special. To Blaine's point, we were worried about Tennessee and the depth on defense when Heupel got there going fast like that because they hadn't been able to accumulate enough depth. It was funny, last year, they realized offensively they weren't great, so they need to kind of put a governor on it and slow it down and let be a defensive team and a run-the-ball team on offense. This year, it's kind of a juxtaposition because you feel like the offense looked pretty good. Like, you want to let them go and let them run, but then you're like, God, do we have the depth on the defensive line to get away with it this year? Is it something where you're going to have to pull back the reins on offense a little bit if all of a sudden you look up in the second quarter, Georgia's kind of shutting you down on offense and the run game for Georgia's
popping?
Well,
that's what makes the system so great, right? It's all dictated on how the game's going, right? Like, if you need to pull back the reins and slow it down, you can, and you're so comfortable in your system. If you need to hit the track, hit the gas pedal, and scream America on offense, you can still do that. That's what makes Josh Heupel's system so great. And it's when you have a guy, a quarterback like Joey Aguilar, who's a seasoned guy, you can mix both tempos dictating on what the game's pace is.
Mm-hmm. All right, so this next one has a little bit of a Tennessee connection in a weird way. Number 12, Utah.
Yeah.
Team I picked to win the Big 12. Say what you want about UCLA. And I don't think any of us thought UCLA was going to be very good. Utah beat their ass to death in every aspect. Dan Pierre, like we said he was going to be, is the perfect fit for this Utah identity and this team. And the things they did to Nico and UCLA and the things that offense did to the UCLA defense, Utah looked like a well-oiled machine in midseason form going on the road and destroying UCLA. I'm telling you right now, I think Utah, and I've got them winning a playoff game, I know it's week one. There's a long way to go. But damn, David, that brought back some Utah, some Kyle Whittingham memories with the way that Utah played.
Well, I took the under in this game at 50.5 because I thought, hey, the way that Utah wants to play offense and run the football and having Dampier, and then combined with the fact that they're such a physical defense in the Big 12, I really like that bet. UCLA couldn't stop them at all. I mean, it just absolutely embarrassing performance by UCLA. So Tennessee not only won their game, and Joey Aguilar looked good, but then Nico goes in the night game and loses to Utah.
And Bama like loses to Florida State. Yes. It was the perfect
great day for Tennessee,
fans.
I like Utah at 12 here. I still have Baylor, obviously, winning the Big 12. Can't go back and change that from preseason. But I do have Utah going 10-2. I feel pretty comfortable about that. And Dampier threw the football a little better than I was expecting.
And again, he doesn't have to go out there and be Joe Montana for this offense, where he just got to stay healthy. I know Utah fans, probably every time he took a hit, were shaking in their boots after what happened to Cam Rising. So Utah 12, then 11. This one's a little controversial because I don't think they look great. And I'll say it. I think Lenore Sellers is a dog. I think Nicholas Harbor, I don't know how you cover him when he can get in and out of breaks like that. They beat Virginia Tech. And Blaine, you know, we watched this game together. And the biggest question we had for South Carolina was on the line of scrimmage, not just the defense that was having to replace six out of their front seven, but the offensive line. And I want to give credit to Virginia Tech. It's not a walk amongst the tulips. But, man, I'm a little worried about South Carolina's offensive line, but I think Lenoris is so good, and there's so much talent that's around him now that Faison's eligible, and they've got team speed on defense. They can run sideline to sideline. Yeah. This South Carolina team, I'm nervous with them at 11. I'm not going to lie.
You should be. What I saw up front on the offensive line from South Carolina, look, Lenore Sellers is going to be another year of him running for his life. I mean, the same thing you saw last year. He's going to make plays. Hell, you saw some of the plays he made in the Virginia Tech game. But that offensive line is a huge liability. I do think the defense played well. I mean, South Carolina defense, even with what they lost, Dylan Stewart's an absolute freak. Kilgore.
I think the defense is
the one big question I had in this game, and maybe it's just week one. You've seen a lot of teams, but South Carolina didn't push the ball down the field as much. Like, you have Nick Harbor. The one time they threw it down the field, it was a touchdown. So I don't understand what Mike Shula was really doing there. I think South Carolina is one of those teams that if you don't press down the field, people are just going to start slowly creeping down. And with that offensive line, it worries me. I'm fine with them sitting at 11 right now because of the athletes that they have and Dylan Seward and Lenore Sellers and Nick Harbor and Kilgore. But I wouldn't be surprised to see South Carolina with four or maybe five losses at the end of the year.
David, I'll say this, you know, and again, I brought up some of the questions I have, obviously, about South Carolina, but there's nothing about Lenore Sellers that I question.
No.
I mean, that you talk about a physical freak. That run on third down he had where he shook the one guy off and then stayed on the sideline, there are so few human beings that are that size that could do that. He is sprinting his way, I think, towards the number one pick eventually. That's how good I think
he's one of the most dynamic football players in the country, as is Nick Harbor, as is Dylan Stewart, maybe the best edge rusher. I mean, when he comes off the ball, I'm like, that's what a top five pick looks like. So the question is, okay, well, how much balance is there on this team? We talk about the 2010 Auburn team a lot, where Cam Newton went on to start how many NFL games? Maybe 155, and the rest of that team started two NFL games. So how good is Lenore Sellers? Can he be that good where he puts a mediocre offensive line on his back? Because you didn't come in like,
that's
it's a great
a good
win.
Comp.
A
I
great
never even
win.
Thought of it. That's such a
it's
good
a great
comp.
Win over Virginia Tech, but can you beat Alabama when they come to town? And they have questions up front too. Can you beat the teams like LSU? Can you do what it takes to win the SEC and take that next step into double digit wins and make the college football playoff? We've been asking it for 4 months. We're asking it again here after week one, but I don't mind South Carolina in the top 15 because of what the potential is.
For sure. All right, let's get to number 10. And some people will be like, wait, how do you have this team number 10? They're 0-1. Well, we actually have, unless I'm counting it wrong, three teams that are 0-1 in our top 10 for the reason that they played a really, really quality opponent. So we have Notre Dame, who is 0-1. But the reason is this. I think it's a couple things. One, I think Notre Dame still has really good coaching staff. They have a lot of talent on that team. These Notre Dame teams tend to get better as the year goes on under Marcus Freeman. But you ran into a buzzsaw on Sunday night against Miami. I don't think it's that Notre Dame sucks. I think Miami's that good. And I was 100% wrong about this game. I love the physicality of Miami. But when I look at Notre Dame, and this is something that we talked about with Matt Moscona as well, I think a couple things happened. One, you didn't give the ball to Jeremiah Love.
No.
What are y'all doing? Mike Dimbrock, I know you're smart. I know you're a good play caller. What in the hell are you thinking? How does CJ Carr have more carries than Jeremiah Love? That is borderline Arkham Asylum behavior. You come out and start the game with a brand new, fresh, green quarterback that's going on the road against a talented team, and you're throwing now screens out here, and you're trying to throw the ball around. So I think he's going to call games better. I'm a little worried, though, about this Notre Dame defensive line, Blaine, and the way they got pitched around. But again, I think Miami's probably that good after watching it again on the offensive line. So Notre Dame will be fine. I didn't have him in the playoff, but I think taking them out of the top 10 would be a bridge too far. And I think it would be disrespectful to Miami and how good they looked and how well they played. I think it was a couple things that cost Notre Dame in that game. Starting a podcast can feel overwhelming. You got script, setup, filming schedule, logos. We're trying to figure it all out. But what we did find out is when you're launching something new, your to-do list is going to grow daily. And finding a tool that both helps and simplifies can be a game changer. For millions of businesses, that tool is Shopify. Make that noise, David.
Cha-ching!
Shopify. Millions of businesses worldwide. 10% of all U.S. e-commerce. That's pretty good. They're behind everyone from big names like Gymshark to that new brand you may have just discovered. Starting out is simple. Just pick one of their hundreds of templates, customize it to match your own style. No design skills needed. And creating content is where their AI really shines. You need product descriptions or catchy headlines? Done. You want better product photos? They got you covered. The best part is how easy marketing becomes. You can reach your customers wherever they are, whether they're scrolling through social media, checking their email. Behind the scenes, Shopify handles everything else. Inventory, shipping, returns, all those details you don't want to worry about. So if you're ready to sell, you're ready for Shopify. With Shopify on your side, sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at Shopify.com/crane. Go to Shopify.com/crane. One more time, David.
Cha-ching!
Attaboy. Shopify.com/crane.
Well, you look at this Notre Dame team. I thought CJ Carr did not have a bad
time. I didn't think he was bad.
For his first career start, I thought he played well. I thought this Miami secondary was extremely good. The questions that you bring up, where's Greathouse in this game? Right? Only three targets?
Yeah.
Right? The guy who was the playoff killer last year for you. Jeremiah Love's out here lining up receiver and catches passes and not getting the ball. The play calling questionable on offense. I think Notre Dame's fine because of one reason. I think their schedule's not that hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you play a Texas A&M team who has trouble with UTSA. After a bye. You have Boise State without Ash Agenti. They're mediocre. You have USC. We'll see. But other than that, I mean, the hardest team you have in your schedule is Syracuse. So I think with the schedule.
Don't disrespect Navy.
Yeah, excuse me. I think this schedule is going to be fine for Notre Dame, and I could see this being the only game.
I don't want it to be that they're in the top 10 because we think they're going to beat up on teams that aren't very good. Like, you're either a top 10 team or you're not, to me, regardless of the schedule. I think Notre Dame, will continue to get better with Marcus Freeman. I do think they can be a top 10 team. I've just got to see more than them just going on the road against Miami with bad play calling and a brand new quarterback.
Here's the way I've been thinking about this. There's a pro and a con for Notre Dame. The pro is that you didn't lose this game at Miami because your young Carr, CJ Carr, was completely not functional, basically. Yeah. Like he looked like he can run the offense and do some great things. But that creates the con of the situation, which is you didn't even do what you're best at. You weren't running the football effectively. Miami just beat you. You got exposed in man coverage, particularly on big downs, like third down.
Yeah.
That to me is what I would worry about for Notre Dame. They didn't look like a college football playoff team after week one, but then again, they didn't when they lost to Northern Illinois a year ago. Yeah. And not only did they make the college football playoff, they won several games and made it to the national championship.
Yep. All right, so let's get to 9. We've got Oregon at 9. Now, I know they played, I think it was Montana State. They beat him to death. Dante Moore looked good. They're 1-0. So Oregon destroys Montana State. I thought Dante Moore did what he needed to do against this team. Look, ho-hum. Ball looked good coming out of his hand. We still don't 100% know on Oregon. We'll find out with this schedule. But with where we had them before the season, and they came out and they handled business against a team they should handle business against, this is kind of like a placeholder for Oregon to be there, in my opinion, until we see a little more further in the
season. And remember, they didn't look great in some of the early games a year ago.
Was it Idaho?
It was a couple of them. Beat Boise by 3, ended up making the college football playoff. But they didn't look great in some of their early games a year ago, and they were still the only power team to go undefeated and won the Big Ten their first year in. So I think Dan Lanning has something special cooking here.
Blaine, anything on Oregon?
Well, I will say this. The spread for this game was, I believe, 21.5. 21-24.
And they won by
46.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the crazy thing about it, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11,
12 different guys run the football in this football game, which is insane. If you watch, Oregon's for real. All right, they're I know Dante Moore's a new quarterback, and there's a lot of questions on him. I'm telling you, this Oregon team is going to be a problem. I'm fine with 9 right now because of who they played, but I wouldn't be like, I think Oregon's a top 5 team.
Yeah, and again, this ranking is fluid. I actually want to put 8 and 7 up there at the same time because there's some similarities here with Clemson at 8 and Texas at 7. They are both 0-1, but if there is any way to be a okay 0-1, this is the scenario. LSU looked national championship good. I know it's only week one. Went on the road. It was a dogfight against Clemson. Clemson had the lead until the second half. Think they're going to be fine. A little worried about the run game, but I think you got to make sure and take your hat off to the LSU defense. Then Texas goes and loses by a touchdown at Ohio State. What are we supposed to drop you out of the top 15 because you had a brand new quarterback that went into the horseshoe and lost by 7, had a chance to tie it at the end? You know, a lot of people are falling off a cliff about Arch. I think he's going to be fine. But David, I'm going to start with you. I would not be shocked to see either or both of these teams in the college football.
I honestly have concerns for both Texas and Clemson right now. I don't think Arch Manning delivers the ball effectively enough through the air to repeat what Quinn Ewers was able to do 2 years in a row, which was make the college football playoff. And then for Clemson on both sides of the football, they didn't look great on offense to me, or particularly on defense, giving up over 100 yards rushing to LSU. But I'm willing to say that that speaks more to how good LSU is and how good the Buckeyes are, that you just ran into really good teams. And again, I don't want to penalize teams for opening up with great competition. At the same time, I'm just using my eyeballs to say, like, here are some of the deficiencies. Is that just because LSU was so good? Is that just because you went on the road and had to play in the horseshoe? We're going to find out more about both teams very quickly.
Who do you trust more, Clemson or Texas, after 1 week?
I would trust Texas.
Yeah. Because that defense still looks.
The defense is exactly what we thought it was.
And they still rushed for 1 6.
Sark's going to be able to turn around and run the ball. And this was my big worry when it came to Clemson. A couple things here. One, Phil Maffa and Will Shipley aren't here. All right, you don't have that bell cow running back that you're used to seeing at Clemson. I mean, their leading rusher against LSU was 16 yards, which is just insane to say. And the personnel you brought back on defense, I get it. You have a lot of draft picks, first-round guys. But this is still the same guys who played last year and got ran through the entire season. So LSU team that didn't have a run game last year found it against all that returning production for Clemson. And on the Texas side, this is what I know. The defense is for real. Sark will clean it up and play calling. The biggest question is, can Arch do it? I understand Ohio State probably has one of the best secondaries in college football, but it's not that to me. Arch couldn't make the easy throws. The simple, get you on the right pace, get you unpressed. He couldn't even do that. His feet looked messed up. He looked pressed. I understand Texas is going to win a lot of games because of how good everything is around Arch. But if Texas wants to get to where Texas wants to be in a national championship, Arch just has to figure it out, and he has to figure it out quick.
All right, let's move to 6 here. And, guys, how cool is this? Florida State.
Florida State.
Because why the hell not? This roller coaster ride that Florida State fans are on has got to be just insane. Like, you go undefeated, 2-10. Then you start the season off by beating Alabama to death. And listen, you can say what you want about, can Castellanos throw it? Can he do this? If their offensive line plays like that, if they block like that on the perimeter, he don't have to be Aaron Rodgers through the air for Florida State to do a lot of damage. And you can make the case that Florida State, and, you know, we're going to get to Miami, but Florida State looked like the best team in the ACC. We'll see what happens with Alabama going forward, but there is no way in hell that Florida State was not going to be in the top 10 after, because what happened last year don't matter. It's a different team. That's, you got to separate year from year, and you talk about getting momentum, which is what you have to have early when you bring in transfers like that, because that'll only grow you guys together. David, I'll start with you. This Florida State team, at least after 1 week, and we'll see what happens with Alabama, they look super dangerous with Malzahn. And everybody's talking about Gus. I thought Tony White called his ass off on defense.
We've been asking for 8 months, will this 2025 Florida State team look more like 23 when they go undefeated and win the ACC, or more like 24 when they go 2-10? Well, not only is the answer, wow, you look a lot more like that 2023 team with Jordan Travis, but you didn't just beat Alabama. Like, you throttled them in almost every phase of the game. And the biggest thing with Thomas Castellanos coming in from Boston College, I asked, How much can he do all of the things he does great without doing what he does poorly? Being erratic with the football, turning the football over. Well, we saw in week one against an Alabama defense, like he was making plays left and right, getting himself out of trouble with his legs, and most importantly, not turning the football over.
Blame Florida State. They look for real, man.
Yeah, they look for real. The big thing with me is like Gus Malzahn, it's not only against Alabama either. Just what he does fits Tommy Cassianos so perfectly.
Perfect.
So perfectly with the motions, the reads, getting outside. And the one thing that killed Alabama, especially in that double mug look, if you're going to do that, your linebackers aren't going to be able to get to the outside and make plays, and everything gets muddy. I think what worries me about this Florida State team is, look, Cassianos only threw it 14 times. And I know he didn't need to come out here and throw it 30 times. I mean, he ended up with 152 yards. He ran for 230 yards. But you're going to walk into a game where the defense that you play says, you're not running the ball. You're not going to run. Tommy Cassianos is going to have to beat me through the air. And when I see that, right, that elevates Florida State to that next level.
Well, that elevates him to national championship.
Then that's the next level right now. You just beat Alabama.
For sure. Well,
week one.
Well, you know, we go straight from FSU to five Miami. I'm telling you right now, you talk about looking complete. If Carson Beck's going to get protected like that, he may win the Heisman if he's going to get protected like that. You want to talk about stupid number with the run game? Think about what he didn't have at Georgia. He didn't get protected great at Georgia. They didn't have a great run game at Georgia last year. I'm watching Miami's offensive line lock Notre Dame up, right? Like they crossed the border, didn't tell anybody. Like this Miami team, I am so excited for Miami and Florida State to be good.
Yeah,
it feels right.
This is how I was growing up.
Yeah, if you're a college football fan, it's to the point now where between Miami and Florida State, I'm trying to be like, who do I think's better? I know we're only one week in, but Miami, they looked physical.
Yeah.
They looked competent.
Fast.
The football IQ was really, really high. And this is why I talk about the ACC, man. Like, there's some teams, at least after this week, that you feel pretty good about. Miami at five, I wouldn't be shocked if people had Miami even higher than five.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd be wrong. We got them at five, and we're going to find out because you go through that Miami schedule. Like, and we can go through it quickly, but, like, we're going to keep knowing. Florida State was saying we're going to keep knowing and keep finding out. Can you keep this consistency?
The ACC just got a lot more interesting. And again, not just because these teams won the football games, but because of how they looked. Man, you're talking about being physical, flying around. Haven't seen that in a long time. Now, again, Miami looked really great opening against Florida a year ago with Cam Ward and Restrepo. But this looked different, right, with the balance that they were able to provide and shut down a Notre Dame run game. That really was surprising to me. But for anyone wanting to know, Florida State host Miami on October 4th. And that one just got interesting.
That one, I got to look at the rest of the games, but I mean, game day, if they're undefeated, game day has got to be there. Blaine, you know, you were the only one that picked Miami. Not only that, you got the score exactly right at 27-24. Did they look like you think they were going to look?
Better.
Yeah.
They looked better, to be honest with you. And the more I looked at the Miami-Notre Dame game, the more I just, I liked Miami. And a couple of reasons why. People don't give enough respect to what this Miami defensive line is. Like, they have, like, Reuben Bain was born in the dark now.
Yeah.
Like, he is a first-round, first-day pick in the NFL drafts. And not only did the secondary look 20 times better, but you could feel them when they got there, right? They were coming with attitude. They were hitting. Didn't have a reckless abandonment, but still conscious in what they need to do when it comes from a cover standpoint. Offensive line, any Mario Cristobal coach team is going to be pretty damn good up front. They beat Notre Dame the way Notre Dame beats people. They ran the ball at a high clip. Mark Fletcher, show me a time Mark Fletcher got hit and went backwards.
Yeah.
And on the defensive line, I mean, Notre Dame only had, what, 90 yards rushing?
Yeah.
Right, which is crazy, which Jeremiah Love and the two backs they have. Miami, it's a lot like LSU to me.
I agree.
The correlation for Miami to LSU, you were just waiting for that 100% defense to figure it out. And if they keep playing at that clip, Miami is good enough to go play for a national championship.
Can I say one more thing about both these programs, Miami and Florida State? I just, there is a part of me that wonders how much of their performance was about everything they heard in the offseason and got up for these opponents. We're still talking about 18 to 22-year-olds. Florida State, there's no way they'll beat Alabama, especially after what Thomas Castellanos was saying, and they went 2-10 a year ago. Miami, you sent the number one overall pick to the NFL. There's no way you're going to even be as good as you were last year, and you didn't make the college football playoff. I just wonder how much of these performances performances was them getting up for these games and they retreat a little bit to that pack in the ACC, or how much of this is, no, we're here to stay. This is who we are. We're going to show you our lasting power.
Yeah, that's the whole gambit, right? That's how many times can you show up and play your best? All right, this is probably where we had our biggest disagreement at who should be four and who should be three. Right now we have Georgia at four, all right, and we have Penn State at three. Go ahead and throw those two teams on there. Now, obviously, Penn State played Nevada and handled business. Georgia played Marshall and handled business. The reason we ended up going with Penn State is just because of what Penn State returns. We feel like we know a little bit more about Penn State. But Blaine, we watched the Georgia-Marshall game.
I'm telling you.
And I get it's Marshall. But Georgia, you know what they look like?
Georgia.
Exactly what they've always looked like. They are so big and fast on defense. Gunnar Stockton, I think, did a really good job with the zone read. He looks like a natural zone read. He can handle the RPO. Georgia just looked fast. They looked physical. They looked disciplined, and they handled business. We know how talented they are. It's just how high is that ceiling, right? And we're not going to know that until we see them play somebody that we respect, and that's going to be Tennessee.
Yeah.
Week three coming up, and then Penn State. Kind of in that same vein, the defense running around. I mean, 33, I think it is. It's just an absolute stud. They got cats running around everywhere. I like the wide receiver core at Penn State with what they brought in. You look at Pena, some of these other guys.
And Hudson.
I mean, both these teams look quality. Didn't play a great team off the rip. But I trust both of them.
Look, I got Georgia going 11-1, and I have Penn State winning the national championship. So to me, it's 6-1, half dozen in the other. Put them in whatever order you want. Both these teams are going to win a lot of football games this year.
My life on the line between Georgia or Penn State, I am picking Georgia 10 out of 10.
Is that the Kirby Smart trust factor there?
There's a Kirby Smart trust factor, and they have guys at the skill position now.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, Branch.
Zachariah Branch is a prop.
Oh, he looked good, boy.
And I've been saying this. He is going to be.
He's like Nightcrawler from X-Men. Just disappears and shows up somewhere else.
When it comes to Georgia, can Gunnar Stockton be the guy?
Yeah.
Right. That's the question. Because I guarantee Zachariah Branch, problem. Oscar Delp, problem. Colby Young, problem. Nate Frazier, problem. Yeah. And the things they have running around on defense.
Yeah.
I don't know how Kirby Smart keeps doing this. They put their backups in, and hell, they're bigger than Auburn starters.
Yeah.
Like, and they could have beat Marshall 300-0.
It's a machine.
If they wanted to. If it's me, Georgia would be at three.
Look, again, you can make a great argument for that. All right. So number two, let's go ahead. Once we put two, you're going to know who number one is. So we can put both of them up there. LSU at number two. And damn it, I think you can make an argument for him to be at one.
Yeah.
I really think you can. That's how good they look to me. LSU looking the way they're supposed to look on defense, but being smart and playing physical, not being over-emotional and playing physical, and then being able to run the ball. And say what you want, I understand Clemson gave up running yards last year, but I'm watching the collisions in that front seven. And I'm watching Caden Durham, who I think is the most underrated running back in the country, tote the rock. That first run he had, I think where he broke the tackle in the backfield and took off around the left edge for like 8-9 yards or something. It just, if he's able to do that, and this LSU team's continue, you talk about having studs on the outside, you never really have to worry about that with LSU. But Barry and Brown, some of the guys they can really do it. That was a catch, by the way, for a touchdown. LSU to me, and we had Matt Moscona on that, we're dropping that one here this afternoon as well. They were about as impressive as you could get week one, going on the road in that environment against an older team and handling, coming back and winning, handling business. LSU at two, they got a squad. They got a squad.
Yeah, I'll say the same thing I said about Georgia and Penn State at 3-4. I really wouldn't argue over whatever order you would put them in. Obviously, LSU's win was on the road. That counts for something. I'm just sitting there looking at that Buckeyes team, and with Caleb Downs on defense and with Jeremiah Smith on offense, there's a reason they put on the type of performance they did against Texas. They look like the best team in the country to me. Unfortunately, like, you know, all biases aside, that hurts my heart. But still, the Buckeyes have reloaded at key positions. They had a great win over Texas. I hope this is a college football playoff matchup, to be honest with you.
Well, Blaine, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, the one concern that people raised, and we talked about it in our preview a little bit, is the interior of the defensive line for Ohio State. I know Texas was replacing some guys on the offensive line, but I think they held up their end of the bargain. I just watch Ohio State at linebacker and in the back end. And again, Arch missed some open throws. I get that. But once you get past 8 yards down the field, you're in Azkaban. You're just locked up. No, and they got Caleb Downs, just the shark swimming in the pool, just daring you to make the mistake.
And I think a lot of that was Ohio State wasn't afraid of Arch Manning throwing the football.
I agree with that.
I will say I have LSU as number one. If you follow me on X, I've been screaming this for the last 5 days. My thing is this. Ohio State's a phenomenal football team. We know that. I still think I really wasn't that impressed offensively. What they did. I thought he looked good, but it wasn't like, and I understand Texas defense is really good, but it wasn't just blowing the doors off of what I wanted to see. I know first week struggles, people dropping balls. Jeremiah Smith dropped a couple, but LSU went into Clemson on the road to Clemson, the fake Death Valley with Cade Klubnik, Heisman hopeful. You brought all this in production on defense, NFL draft, to have seven of them on defense. And they went in there, and I know the score was only 17-10, but they beat their ass. They dominated
the line of
on both sides of the ball. They got a touchdown taken away from them and just owned every aspect of a Clemson team that a lot of people have winning the national championship.
And still could.
LSU's week one performance, when you put everything in aggregate together, I think deserves that number one spot in the nation, going on the road, beating a guy like Cade Klubnik, not beating Julian Sain in his first start while Ohio State playing against a guy with his first start, two experienced quarterbacks with everything they need. I know Antonio Williams got hurt for Clemson. LSU's performance is deserving of the number one team in the nation.
And again, I think you make some valid points. I do want to say this about Ohio State offensively. One, I thought Julian Sain looked about as good as any young quarterback in his first start. If you go back and really watch the film and don't just look at the box score. I also think Brian Hartline called a really good game for two reasons. One, I thought he let Julian open it up a little bit early and showed him some trust, and he was mixing it up pretty well. But also as a play caller, if you've ever done it, reading what is going on in the game, I think about halfway through the second quarter, Brian Hartline in Ohio State said, okay, and Ryan Day said, okay, Texas is not moving the ball. The only way that we are going to lose this game is if we do something stupid and allow Texas back into this game, like taking too many chances. It seemed like Ohio State made the conscious decision. Our defense is playing their ass off right now. Offensively, let's not do anything crazy. Let's run our normal stuff. We don't have to run a bunch of reverses or just throw the ball deep or whatever. And then when they hit Carnell Tate to go up 14-0, then it really was like, all right, we don't turn the ball over. We don't give up a special teams touchdown. We're going to win the game, or at least be in a fantastic position to win the game. So I wouldn't just write off Ohio State offensively yet. And also, I think Texas... I think Texas got a top three, top four defense man. So, like, you got both of those things happen.
Well, yeah, trust me, the last thing I'm doing is writing off Ohio State.
I'm not saying you were, but I'm talking about everybody out there that's like, well, they didn't score 35 points.
Yeah, well, if you score 35 points against Texas, go ahead and get the national championship.
Yeah.
Good God, congratulations. I'm just saying what LSU had to overcome in that game, I think is more than what Ohio State was dealing with against Texas.
All right, so that is our first official Monday edition, Crane & Company's top 15 power ranking.
Can't wait for the
comments. Not a rating.
Can't wait for the comments.
Oh, yeah. Again, please, where do you agree? Where do you disagree? If you want to put your top 15 down there, please do let us know. Make sure you check out the pinned comment up top. Make sure you subscribe and like the chances of me not trying to make it through a day without college football after they gave us 5 straight days of it. I've never done but I feel like this is when you quit.
Pretty close.
Kind of like how it feels. But we're going. Ha! Gone. Couple more than Jeremiah Smith.